Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin. Theodore, breathe in, breathe out, me and more, breathe in, breathe out, never mind, it was time, number nine, let my lies, feline, with a death wish, be right, didn't help, no name on a guest list, hold on, we're destined.
Wow, I remain at the DraftKings Sportsbook here at the Golden Nugget. The guys are headed out. John's got a meeting apparently he had to get to, and Lance is probably going to play the slots. But we're still here till noon, so if you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. And we had an interesting night last night. If you were listening to the morning show, you heard John's lies about our night. I did not watch any football with him. I was up in my room dealing with something, trying to book a flight. But I did get the Rockets on the television as well. And, Sean, I put the clip, maybe a clip a lot of people in Houston haven't seen unless they were online trying to find more information on the Amen Thompson foul. The clip on the rundown is from the Denver perspective, whatever their, maybe it's altitude, whatever their broadcast network is, and it showed an angle that would suggest that maybe the call was correct. Have you seen that clip yet?
Which call? And actually,
it's the Amen Thompson foul.
Oh, okay.
The Amen Thompson foul.
The trip.
Alleged trip if you're a Houston fan, or the non-existent trip if you're a Houston fan. I have it up. It's under notes, crying about fouls, was it a foul? You take a look. I did not see a foul initially when I saw it, and yeah. I can understand why people are very upset.
I will say the peacock shots of it were, I would say, less than useful. They somehow didn't have a camera on it that like showed anything really.
Yeah,
it was all like on the, like, I don't know, half court side of the thing. So the Denver player, I think it was Hardaway, was in the way.
And, yeah, and he was trying to come around on the screen to get to the basketball. If you missed it, the Rockets were up by one after Alper Çengün scored over Spencer Jones to give the Rockets a one-point lead. And it felt like they were going to go get themselves a win in a hostile environment, a place that's very difficult to win. And then this foul happens. The away-from-the-play foul that leads to an immediate free throw for Jamal Murray. The Rockets did challenge it. The challenge was unsuccessful. Rockets fans, players, coaches were perplexed by not only the first call, but then also the unsuccessful challenge. I have seen the clip that from the Denver angle. By the letter of the law, Hardaway's trying to break away from Amen Thompson. Hardaway's leg is up in the air, and Amen, as he's chasing him, you can say Hardaway's kicked Amen in the shin, or Amen's shin was in the way, but I've seen that called a foul maybe not in that exact scenario as far as the positioning of the players, but I've seen a leg be stationary before a defender, the offensive player try to make a move, and there's contact, and they call a foul. I've seen it. We've all seen it. It happens all the time where you think, hey, how is that a foul? His leg ran into his leg, and they call it a foul. So the situation is you wouldn't want to see it, but once I saw the clip from the overhead shot zoomed in on the play, if that's what the officials got to look at during their review, I'm not surprised they stay with the call on the court. Of course, the Nuggets don't make what would have been the game winner. It goes to overtime, so he still had another five-minute period to go, and the Nuggets were able to win that one. The fourth quarter was exciting. Shots being knocked down by Reed Shepard, whoever Spencer Jones is. He knocked down a shot for the Nuggets. Of course, Jokic was having his way. Jokic fouled out of the game, so it wasn't as if the fouls were always going in the Nuggets' favor. They lost maybe the best player in the league during that game. Of course, Alpe wasn't thrilled with plenty of foul calls, but the Rockets do not win it late. Alper Çengün gets a last chance to tie the game. His shot goes begging, and the Rockets lose. They are now 0-4 against the best teams in the Western Conference. We go all the way back to Game 1 against the Thunder that went to double overtime. You had Kevin Durant fouling Shea, and then also he missed a free throw as well. Of course, Detroit, that's an Eastern Conference team that they lost to go to 0-2. But if we remember, they lost to the Spurs in the NBA Cup. They've lost to the Nuggets twice. So that's 0-4. You know, before the year started, I talked about how this year was supposed to be a building year and a learning experience, and we're going to see how this team coalesces and comes together, and then we can officially judge them as the playoffs begin. It's not a concern, but it's just something to look at, that they've played several close games against the best teams in the West and haven't come out on top yet. Now, at this point, I think three of them have been on the road, so that certainly could play a part in how these games have gone, but they're 0-4. Now, they have handled, outside of Detroit, if you want to say it, the best in the East. They for whatever reason, handled Cleveland really well, and Cleveland's not off to a great start this year. But if we're talking about prominent teams in the East, they've been fine there, and they've been fine overall. But just something to keep in mind. Right now, when we talk about the Rockets, they're 16-3 against everyone not named the Thunder, Nuggets, or Spurs. And those just happen to be the teams ahead of them in the West. The only team else that's ahead of them is the Lakers. They haven't played the Lakers yet. They'll have three more games. They'll have three games against the Lakers as they go through the year. But, yeah, so they've been able to play well in these games, compete, maybe be on the short hand of the stick when it comes to foul calls, at least if you go by what happened last night. But overall, they have not been able to get it done against the good teams. Alpe had a really great night, despite missing what would have been a game-tying three. He showed out against Denver. He didn't play as well in their last meeting, but him and Jokic, two best players on the floor. And Kevin Durant was very efficient. Maybe didn't get as many shots up as you like. He only got 14 up, scored 25 points, got to the free throw line plenty, so that certainly adds to the value and maybe speaks to the lack of shots if he's getting fouled enough to get to the line 8 times. But it'll be a question if they continue to lose these close games, who should be getting these shots? Very little time remaining, but you don't want to have to lean on an Alpe step back three to tie the game. Of course, it's probably too basic of a question to go, why isn't Kevin Durant taking that shot? Well, the Nuggets are aware that Kevin Durant exists. They don't want him getting free and taking a shot. I think Kevin Durant's willingness to fit in, which is one of his attributes, he's one of the superstars, one of the few superstars where you don't have to change your entire universe for him to succeed. You don't have to change your entire team to highlight him. He can get in and fit in kind of no matter what. Maybe as the season goes forward, he becomes more demanding of the basketball in situations like that where he has to be the one taking the final shot. It's something they as a team will work through. But right now, you'd like to see them get over the hump against one of the better teams, particularly a team you think you might have to go through when it comes to reaching your ultimate goal. Of course, that's winning a championship. Even if it's not this year, you like to see this team make a deep run, and you might have to go through the Nuggets to do that. So, Sean, you've seen it now. Foul or no foul?
It's one of those where it's like, I guess it's a foul. It's not like, it's not the type of foul that anyone likes being called, where it's just like their legs hit each other, and so yeah. Now it's a foul on the defense.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I know the rule. As I said, I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I've seen that call the foul almost my entire life.
And there's almost enough with the arm to like, if you want to like make the pass interference angle of like, sure. See, he did kind of move him with the arm.
Yeah, there's some contact with the arm. Not negligent. It's not really a lot of contact. It'd be one of those things where you're like, hey, play on if it wasn't for the contact below the waist.
If, like, he didn't fall over.
Yeah, if he doesn't fall over, a foul's not being called. But he did fall over, and I don't believe it was a flop. He just lost his balance after coming in contact. I equate it to, like, soccer. If that happens in the box, that's a penalty on Thompson. Even though, like, in soccer, if you draw your leg back, to strike the ball and the opponent is behind you and his leg is in the way and you catch it, they call the penalty even though he didn't make or take any action to defend you. But if his leg's there, that's a penalty or a foul, and it played out kind of that way in the Rockets game last night. Unfortunately, Jamal Murray knocked down a free throw, overtime happens, and the Rockets go on to lose that one. Now, Ime Udoka was very vocal last night. Let's play that clip here. He was aggressive in his tone and words regarding the officials who were on the court. And I don't know that he even thinks it went strictly just against him. If you go by some of the quotes when he said we probably should have been or could have been called for more techs, I think he knows that they're complaining about what went on. I don't know if you want to say went over the line, but certainly could have resulted in Nuggets free throws because of technical. So maybe the calls went both ways in as far as their the calls went both ways as far as them not being correct, and the Nuggets would have stuff to complain about, and so are the Rockets. But the biggest foul of the game goes against the Rockets, and here's Ime Udoka after the game explaining the referees and what he thinks of them.
Part of the BPL, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, just in general, I think it's poorly officiated game I've seen in a long time. Two have no business being out there, and the crew chief is acting starstruck, so... You're seeing all kind of inconsistent calls, and I'm sure you should have got a few more texts.
What do you say to your team when a game is being called the way that it was tonight?
Keep being who we are. We're not going to adjust to poor officials. So we're going to do what we do, and hopefully they can adjust and call it the right way.
Yeah, the free throw disparity, always something we talk about when you complain about the referees. The Nuggets got to the line 33 times, the Rockets 26, and Jamal Murray got to the line 15 times. The Nuggets' two stars, Jokic and Murray, combined for 26 of the 23 free throws attempted, and it was a more moderate number for the Rockets' top two guys in Şengün and Durant. They combined for 14, and that's Ime Udoka likely looking at a fine. Who knows how big it'll be. No one's worried about his money. He'll be just fine. But I think as a coach, you got every right to complain, particularly in the moments after a game like that where it's competitive, it's heated, your team's trying to get a big win on the road, and it goes the way it does. I have plenty of respect for him in his actions. What I don't particularly care for is the voicing of your frustrations like online. Like if you're a Rocket fan, understand that sucked the way that game went. Your team fought hard. Alpi makes a big shot, and you think just defend for three seconds pretty much, and this game is over. Guard the inbound, make sure no one gets an open look, and you're gonna walk out of Denver with the win. But all the complaining when I have never seen a fan go, you know what, we got over. I don't think I've ever seen it online. I don't think I've ever seen a fan or a media member who, and mostly it's me not even going after fans. It's just the people who cover the team who have an online voice. If you've never tweeted or posted about how the team were the got the benefit of a bad call, can we back off? It's one game in the regular season that sucked the way it went down, but have some self-awareness, because no one ever takes the other side when their team is the beneficiary of a big call, and that's the nature of fandom. But if you are an account that does that, I would hope, although I know it's not going to happen, the next time the Rockets get the benefit of a call, you go, you know what? All right, that evened out. That's my fantasy world. I don't see that happening. Unfortunately for the Rockets, they're on the short end of a tough one. They'll move on, but I would like better results against the best teams. They won't have to deal with one of the best teams coming up next. Their next game is Thursday against the Pelicans. That one should be an easy one for them as they try to get back on track. They've been pretty good on the road, 8-5. They got to go to New Orleans, who is bad at home. So you look at that one and go, okay, that should be a pretty easy one once they take the floor on Thursday night. Tonight, you've got the end of the NBA Cup. You got Knicks Spurs on Prime if you want to see a team take home a made-up title. That's in store for you on Prime as the Spurs and Knicks will go at it. Both 18-7 on the year, both having pretty good years, and one of them's going to try to take home the baby of Adam Silver. We'll go to break with that. When we come back, we'll get to some Texans news. Got a guy out for the year. One of their inside interior defensive linemen is done for the year, and D'Amico Ryans has an update on some other injuries coming off the win against the Cardinals. So we'll talk some Texans. If you want to get in, 713-780-3776. We'll also get into the movement in the portal in regards to quarterbacks, because some big names made their announcements yesterday, and these are big names that didn't play particularly well. So we'll see how enticing they may be for a team who thinks they can compete for a title. And, of course, the biggest name of all the quarterbacks in college made his decision as well. So get into what Arch Manning decided to do and in regards to his future. We're here till noon here at the DraftKings Sportsbook in Lake Charles at the Golden Nugget. We will be back.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
We got to have a talk about just Saturday. I'm looking at ESPN right now, and Chris Canty and Stephen A. have their top five lists, and we know we all wait for those guys to put their top five NFL teams list together every week, and they both have the Texans in the top five. Jeff Saturday, no, doesn't have them. Has the Bills over the Texans when the Texans, of course, have owned Josh Allen. That's despicable.
What's the point of even playing the games,
yeah,
Jeff?
Yeah, what are we doing? Didn't we just learn from the Notre Dame-Miami stuff?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? I'm glad the real football guys like Stephen A. and Chris Canty, I mean, Chris Canty actually did play, so the joke doesn't land as much. At least that football guy knows that the Texans are better than the Bills.
Yeah, what side of the ball did Chris Canty play?
He's a defender. Mm-hmm. He played on the defensive line where the Texans wrecked shop. Meanwhile, Jeff Saturday, the offensive line guy, maybe is not
like
putting
Jake Andrews.
Didn't that guy just snap a ball through his quarterback's legs? Yeah, sure, and wound up in a touchdown. You think Peyton Manning would allow me to get away with
that?
Yeah,
he's like, if I did that to Peyton, I'd be on the news the next.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, it's very true, actually. If he did that to Peyton Manning and made Manning look foolish, even if Edgerrin James ran it in for a touchdown, Jeff Saturday would have to answer for it. So he doesn't put the Texans in, but Stephen A. and Chris Canty do. So good on us. Nice job, Texans. You've made the top five for those two guys. Speaking of the team, they and defensive linemen, they're not going to have Mario Edwards the rest of the way. He tore his pectoral. And you hear that and you don't even have to hear the diagnosis. Any torn pectoral, ACL, those are, of course, Achilles. Several of the injuries that when you hear them, you know, guy's done for the year. And Mario Edwards will not be able to help this team down the stretch, which is unfortunate. Look, the interior's played pretty well. They have a bunch of guys who aren't stars, but they do their part. Tommy Togiai does his part. Of course, Nico Autry can float inside and out. But Mario Edwards, another one of those guys. The Texans haven't thrown a lot of resources at the interior just because the stars of the team, stars of that defense, are the defensive ends and the secondary. But they've done their part. The Texans don't get gashed when teams try to run the football. It's just part of their how they play and how aggressive they are. So if they're going to miss Mario Edwards, we'll see how they make do there. Some other injuries that D'Amico Ryan's updated us on yesterday. Beyond Mario Edwards, Stingley, Woody Marks, and Nick Chubb all dealing with day-to-day. Nick Chubb didn't play in the game on Sunday. It opened up space for Jawar Jordan, and now he's the, at least for a day, the taste of the town, or at least the talk of the town. But D'Amico was asked about him yesterday and said, you know, good on Jawar, but he didn't give the impression that he was just going to give him snaps. The rookie out of, I believe, Louisville, he's small. And the question would be, how many snaps can he play without the defense knowing we're just going to hand him the football? Can he be a guy who holds up when better defenses decide to blitz the Texans? I think I said it yesterday and on the morning show. It'd be like if you decided to make a guy of Tank Dell size your pass protecting back. It's not a good decision. You've got blitzing linebackers. Is Jawar Jordan going to hold up? If you want to use him as purely out of the backfield, or of course you're just going to hand him the football and hope he breaks a big one, that's cool. Or maybe we just look at it, he was playing the Cardinals are bad, and maybe we don't take everything from what he did in the preseason or what he did against a bad Cardinals defense. So as long as Nick Chubb comes back and Woody Marks is ambulatory, I don't know that we're going to see a lot of Jawar Jordan for the Texans. But he did have a really nice day on Sunday, and that led to at least helped the Texans win that game. So they have some small nagging things. We'll see how the practice report plays out on Wednesday when the guys are back at practice as they get ready for the Raiders. But D'Amico Ryans did speak about what we believe is the strength of the defense, or at least strength of the team, which is the defense. He talked about their performance. And look, it doesn't need to get talked about very much as far as critiquing a defense that's been great all year, but there were plays that were made. Trey McBride, he's one of the best tight ends in the league. He made plays, if not for a missed throw by Jacoby Brissett, it may be a one-score game coming out of overtime. I think Wilson had the inside on Kamari Lassiter, just that the ball was thrown poorly, and Kamari Lassiter, because the Texans never drop interceptions, he made a play on that, kneeled down and did a backflip. But I could see why the coach wasn't thrilled with the defensive performance, and I don't know if I threw it on the rundown, Sean. I'll find it for you if it hasn't been already saved. But D'Amico Ryans was asked about his defense, and they didn't play to their standard. If you just go by points per game, I mean, no one would say that they weren't playing hard or they weren't physical. But I think against a bad football team, D'Amico Ryans expected his defense to be more locked down, and Jacoby Brissett, because he's a guy who's going to stand in there and throw the football, made some plays. So I am actually not that surprised he came out and wasn't overly thrilled with how his defense has played, because you looked at what they've done so far. They shut down Josh Allen, who for whatever reason they own. You know, they go into Indy and put up a good performance. Now Daniel Jones is banged up, but that's a Colts team who could put up points, and they handled them. If we're talking about their recent run and what they've done to opposing offenses, they've been really good. We know what they did in Kansas City against Patrick Mahomes when he had an intact LCL and ACL. So you expect the Cardinals to come in here and get next to nothing, and that did not happen. So, Sean, I just threw it on there, and we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans a little bit on that defensive performance. As they didn't play to his standard, and you want your coach to be that demanding of that unit. no off days, because they're going to have to be the strength. You're not going to have days offensively like you had against the Cardinals. It's just not how this offense is built. CJ can get going, and certainly that was nice to see. But overall, how they're going to win big games this year, it's for that defense to play at a peak level. I'm not too worried about it. It's not my job to be too worried about it, but you do like that your coach is on it. So once that's ready, let me know. We'll get to that. So here's DeMeco Ryans on his defense against the Cardinals on Sunday.
From that game, you know, defensively, that game was not up to our standard. Like, so there are a ton of things that we can improve upon, a ton of things that we need to get better at, things that we worked that we didn't play up to our standard defensively. So we have a lot to go out and improve.
The defense is gonna be, come on. It was like 20 points is not what they're used to, but it's not a bad day overall. I'm starting to look at some of the games around the league of teams who gave up 20 or less. You know, the Chiefs and Chargers, that was 16-13. Baltimore shut out Cincinnati. You know, Chicago did what they did to Cleveland. It was 31-3. But most of the league broke the 20-point barrier. But as we know, the Texans' defense isn't like most of the league. So I imagine against the Raiders, he doesn't want a repeat performance. Look, Jacoby Brissett, I respect him because he'll stand in there, take shots, and throw the football. If they give up 20 to Kenny Pickett, then maybe I will side with DeMeco and be a little concerning. Brock Bowers is out there. Can he duplicate what Trey McBride did? I would be surprised, mostly because Kenny Pickett is throwing him the football, and the Raiders are an absolute disaster offensively. They were just shut out this past week by the Eagles. I know this isn't possible, but if the Texans could get a minus point total versus the Raiders, I think that's what would make DeMeco happy, just because he doesn't want the Eagles to outshine them.
Negative two.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it, but I think that's his goal for Sunday, to get the Raiders into a negative situation. Like, I guess maybe like 0 points and negative offensive yards. I think that's the closest we can get.
Or a safety.
Yeah.
That's what safety should be, minus two, not plus two for the other team.
Well, it's not a bad idea. Just to show how embarrassing it is for it to happen to you.
Yeah, exactly.
If they force a safety, that's his negative two. So instead of it being 31-0, it should be 29-2. I would agree.
If I'm the Vegas Raiders and I'm whoever the interim offensive coordinator is, this is like the last thing I want to hear DeMeco Ryans say.
That he wasn't happy with his team's performance.
Like, what? 20 points? You guys were up three scores the entire game.
It was never a game. You gave up. Look,
like,
DeMeco.
It immediately became garbage time. Like, within, I don't know, in the second quarter, it was just garbage time for entire game. So, yeah, they, you know, Brissett got some garbage time yardage. Trey McBride went off. And DeMeco Ryans is basically from Cobra Kai saying sweep the leg.
I think his biggest problem is that at one point it was 33-20, and the Cardinals had the football with the chance to get it into one score, and that drive ended with a three and out. I think there was a play to one of the Cardinals' backup tight ends where he thought he was interfered with. The referee didn't throw a flag, and then the Texans got the ball back at their own 45, and then went down and scored a touchdown and put it away. I think he thought to himself, why do they have the football with the chance to make it a one-score game? And that's what he's holding on to. But I don't know who the Raiders' interim OC is, but it's got to be a tough week to figure out how you're going to do anything against the Texas defense. And now you have a motivated head coach who's going to motivate that defense to put on their best performance of the year.
Yeah, it's like Chopped, where it's like, all right, interim OC for the Raiders. You have a terrible offensive line. You have Kenny Pickett starting at quarterback. And you have a pissed off DeMeco Ryans because he gave up 20 points to the Arizona Cardinals. Go make a dish for us, please. Like, yeah. What? No.
The man in question is one Greg Olsen. He's a longtime play caller.
Tight end for the Panthers back then?
Not that one. Yes. But he was at one point an OC for the Miami Hurricanes, so there is a tie-in to it.
Where'd he live?
I don't know.
What floor of the
no, he wasn't the apartment. He wasn't G-Reg. He wasn't on whatever that, floor.
If I was Greg Olson, I'd try to pin it on this guy. I try to pin the rap on this guy.
You know what? I got to pull it back. There's so many guys named Greg Olson. This wasn't one of them.
I still try to pin on the other guy.
Yeah. there have been so many Olsons running through the University of Miami at one point, but this isn't the Olson who was the OC at one point. But, hey, Greg Olson, who been around a long time, and Pete Carroll brought him in to be the quarterback's coach. He had him in Seattle as well to be the quarterback's coach. He is now the interim OC for the Raiders, and he's got to find a way to put together. I guess the question is, because we don't think they're scoring many points here, if any, do the Raiders put together a touchdown drive, like a legitimate one, not one where it's a turnover by the Texans and they get the ball at like the Texans 30-yard line, which I would still question whether they will score. I just think they would get sacked a couple times and be out of field goal range pretty quickly.
Yeah, what, drive of 60 or more yards that ends in a touchdown?
Can Greg Olson put together along Kenny Pickett a touchdown drive off, let's just say, either a punt or a kickoff return that goes over 60 yards? I don't see it. Maybe we get the
garbage time. Maybe like the fourth quarter.
Yeah, maybe even then. I don't see it.
Yeah, the Texans don't exactly like pull the starters.
And even if they do, I mean, then you have like DeNico Autry getting more pass rush opportunities.
Great. Now he's excited he gets to play.
Yeah, and all he has to worry about is rushing the passer. 31-0 last week for the Raiders. Do I want to hold the Texans to the "you got to shut them out" standard? No, I mean, I feel like it's unfair to expect an NFL team to get shut out 2 weeks in a row, but if any team could do it, it's the Raiders. We talked about it yesterday because we were discussing them being the future opponent, that their quarterback threw for 64 yards on 25 attempts, completed 15 passes. We talked about it for 64 yards. So if people were a little disgusted by what they saw from quarters 1 through 3 on Monday night last night from Tua, just think about what Kenny Pickett was up to in a game no one was watching. 15 completions for 64 yards. I'm going to hold them to the standard of Kenny Pickett has to throw for under 100 yards. I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
I think it's fair, too. I'm looking at just the Raiders' like games this year. They have a game where they scored 9, 6, 0, 7, 10, 14, 17, zero again. Like that.
So they've been shut out twice, 31-0.
They've been shut out twice.
What's the record for number times a team has been shut out in an NFL season?
It can't be more than 3 times, right? Well, like you had to be so bad to get shut out.
I'll have that answer on the other side.
Modern era? These guys can make 60-yard field goals.
Yeah.
You have to just end a drive on like the opponents out of 40.
Just think about how often teams go for it on fourth and short on their own side of the field to extend drives. And that this Raiders team has been shut out twice in this season and by the same score. It didn't happen consecutively. So let's look at what happened the last time they got shut out. 31-0, and then they scored 39 against an AFC South opponent, the Jags. 29, excuse me. They lost 30-29 after being shut out. That was at home. So the Raiders have responded after being embarrassed. I don't foresee 29 points against Houston. That 29 points came against the Jags.
Geno Smith had 284 for 4 touchdowns.
Against
one
the Jags. Yeah, that game went to overtime. I think the Raiders went for 2 and lost in overtime. Yeah, that's not happening on Sunday.
No OT, we're calling it?
No, I am of the opinion that anything more than 99 yards by Kenny Pickett's a failure, honestly. This should be a game where we're bored, we're thinking about other things. I'm already prepping for the disaster that will be the Christmas party. That's all that I should be worried about by about 1:15 on Sunday. How am I going to get through the Christmas party the next day?
Well, at 1:15, I probably also will be looking at what the double box options are, because this is a 3:25 game. So I think.
Oh, it's a late afternoon game.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know.
For some reason, I guess for the Raiders.
Yeah. Why is this
comfortable?
Why is this a second window game?
because you know.
So I gotta wait
so
around.
Vegas can watch their team.
So I gotta wait around and watch this game into like six o'clock.
Yeah, and there's two Saturday games, so the afternoon slate's pretty weak, honestly.
That's tough.
Wait, you have Jags Broncos. That's what I'll be watching.
Yeah, that's
as,
the one.
As this other game is happening.
While we expect the Texans to take care of business, that Jags-Broncos game will be a big one. Because if the Broncos can beat the Jags, we're talking about the Texans at least being tied record-wise for first place in the AFC South. I am not someone who cares that much about division tiebreakers until I need to take a look. But as it stands now, the Texans lead in that only because they've played one more game in the division. They're 4-1. The Jags are 3-1. Their division stuff won't change, but conference record would change. Texans are likely to be 8-2, and if the Jags lose, they drop to 7-3. So some of the things would go in the Texans' favor with the win. And, of course, the Jags don't have another game against the Colts, and so do the Texans. So a lot to be figured out. The rest of the way, but they also finish the year at the Titans. So if they're going to drop a game, particularly if you look at credit to Phillip Rivers for surviving, but it's still Phillip Rivers and that Colts team, the Jags likely will be favored going into that one. The Texans want to win this division. The help they're going to need likely will have to come this Sunday against the for the Jags against the Broncos. They're going to need the Jags to drop that one. So I'm going to do the research and find out how many times a team has been shut out in a season since, like, 1995, and see if the Raiders are on the verge of matching something, and maybe the Texans can do something historic. I did want, before we go, I did want to say this, because I mentioned in passing the Steelers-Dolphins Monday night game. I don't watch the Steelers play a lot. I don't have to deal with them winning football games because I don't root for an AFC North team. But I don't know if there's a worse feeling than watching the Steelers act like they've accomplished something. Like watching Mike Tomlin stomp the sidelines when he's beating up on a bad football team, and particularly if that one is one you root for, it's got to be tough. Because normally, over the last 5 to 10 years, when the Steelers have been okay but not great, when they see good football teams, sometimes there's that 1,000-mile stare that Mike Tomlin has because things aren't going in his favor. But not last night. He was prowling that sideline going, let's go, let's go. Jalen Ramsey was having a field day. If you're a Browns fan and sometimes not so much so with the Bengals because Joe Burrow's been there, but even before then, like when the Steelers are very average but they're acting like they're not average, it's got to be tough. I like the Mike Tomlin who's like, you know what? Well, they're trying to get to 9-8. Not the one who thinks they've got a real team. That team is average at best. After watching them play last night, it's just that, hey, you play a bad football team who doesn't deal with cold weather, well, then the Steelers feel like, hey, it's the good old days. When like 04 and 2010 when we were really good. You want the Steelers. I hope the Texans get the Steelers in the playoffs because if you watch them against anyone competent so far this year, they've been meh. I think that's what the Steelers have been over the last 5 years. They've been okay, and that's why they wanted Mike Tomlin out. At least some of them did. But now they're 8-6, control their own fate in that division. And I think the goal for anyone is get to the 5 seed. If you get to the 5, you get to play the Steelers. And if you have any semblance of a team, you're probably going to be favored going in. Outside of getting to face the Jags, maybe if the Texans don't win the division and heading to Jacksonville, that would be my easy choice. Go face Pittsburgh. Take that defense up to Pittsburgh and torture Aaron Rodgers for 4 quarters, and you're probably heading to the divisional round. But, hey, you got to get there first. We'll go to break with that. We'll do the research and find out about the Raiders, and we'll get into some college news because some quarterbacks have made their decisions about whether they're staying or leaving. And the reporting from the beginning of the year holds true when it comes to Archer Manning. So we'll talk about that when we come back. But
your
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
Trying to find out how many times a team has been shut out in the season is more difficult than I thought, because it's all leaning the positive, like featuring the defenses who have done it. So I'm trying to type it in a way that will give me the answer. So I'll still figure that out. It's probably more than three, which the Raiders could possibly have happen to them if the Texans do it, but I don't think it's going to be much more than that. We'll see. Okay, some college football news. Arch Manning is going to stay at Texas, which had been the reporting before the year began, thanks to his granddad. So I don't know if it's actually reporting when Archie is telling people that that Arch is going to stay. So he'll be at Texas in 2026. The draft will have to wait a year, which seemed like an obvious thing when you saw his start. Now, he did play better, and of course it culminated in the win against A&M. We'll see what he does against Michigan. We forget that because of playoff. Well, we forget because the playoff exists that teams still do play bowl games, and Texas is playing in one of the more prominent ones. It's Texas versus Michigan, so the storylines for maybe the first time ever, Texas is competing in a football game, and the storylines won't be about them. All the attention will be on Michigan because of the Sharon Moore stuff. So look at Texas. You can just go out there and go play a football game. Yeah. Don't have to worry about anything. Nobody's really talking about you. You're the least. I'm not going to say you're least important because you're Texas, of course.
Thank you.
I wouldn't dare suggest that you're not important. But you're not the story. You're not the narrative that people are going to discuss going into the game. Look at that. Just go out there and try to get the 10 wins.
Steve Sarkisian's like, look, the other guy got fired in embarrassing fashion.
Yeah, not me.
Oh,
look at that. No, nothing about me heading to the NFL. I'm just going to stay here, try to get myself the double-digit wins for the third year in a row and get ready for next season.
It didn't even click for me that this is huge for 10-win seasons. For three consecutive 10-win seasons, you can put it on a graphic after...
That's what it's for, honestly.
It's for the, from January till August where you don't play football games and you can go, three straight 10-win seasons. Who else can say that?
This is big for the social team.
Yeah.
To be able to throw up there. And then when Steve Sarkisian's touting his program, third consecutive double-digit win season.
And I'm sitting here like, wait, in 5 years, I'm like, wait. They won 10 games, but they didn't make the playoff? How's that? Oh.
You had to play. You played a bowl game. Yeah.
Yeah, they... Whatever.
Yeah.
Remember what happened to Sharon Moore? That was crazy.
But at least it's the Citrus Bowl against Michigan. It's not the Citrus Bowl against, like, Northwestern, who had a good year. At least you can say, hey, we beat one of the preeminent programs of college football.
Bryce Underwood going down.
That's right. We talked about it. Anybody opting out? Any more news about Texas players not playing in the game?
Michael Taft will be preparing himself for the NFL along with Anthony Hill. And then there's another linebacker that is entering the transfer portal that was an actual starter.
And speaking of that, we have some quarterbacks announcing their decision. Dylan Raiola out at Nebraska. Seemed like a foregone conclusion once his younger brother decided he didn't want to play at Nebraska. Lance let us know that it looks like Dylan Raiola is going to be making less wherever he goes than what he did to go to Nebraska. Yeah, we've had multiple years watching him play. The promise of what he was supposed to be after he decommitted from Georgia, and I'm sure the bidding war that took place to take him from Georgia. Yeah, it makes some sense that he's no longer going to be making what he made at Nebraska.
That to me is like the story of the guys that entered the portal yesterday. Is that it was like a couple guys were highly touted, but actually haven't played that all that well as college quarterbacks, and then other guys that have actually played well, but just are less touted, less like you know, from when he was 17, this guy's going to be an NFL player.
Who also, like, Sorsby is in the portal. We've also got...
He falls under bucket number two.
Yeah.
Sam Levitt, bucket number two.
Sam Levitt.
Lagway and Rayola, bucket number one.
So Sam Levitt in the portal, Lagway in the portal. Lagway, DJ Lagway, the former Florida quarterback who got a lot of hype coming off the end of last year, is a guy who met with John Summerall and the new staff at Florida. Wasn't all that interested in leaving Florida, but was told that he would have to compete for the job, and that was enough for him. Maybe along with when you have to compete for the job, you're not going to get the type of deal you thought you were going to get.
Yeah. John Summerall was like, hey, man, look, I watched the games. I can pull up the stats right quick.
He goes, look, I'm making half of what Lane Kiffin was going to make. You're going to make half of what you think you're going to make here. Look, we all have to make sacrifices if you want to play or coach for the University of Florida. So DJ Lagway on the market. The question is, of course, after watching all these players who had all the hype around them and all the potential for what they could be, watching them play for a full season, how much and how big will the bidding war be? Because transfer quarterbacks do well. You look at who's in a playoff this year, the outlier, if we're discussing the teams who are power five or power four, excuse me, the outlier is what Julian Sain, who just stayed at Ohio State. Actually, I take it back. He transferred from Alabama, but he never really played at Alabama, so he feels like strictly an Ohio State quarterback. But he also is a transfer, too. He left when Nick Saban left, so he doesn't really fit the profile, but I guess I'll give it to him in the sense that he didn't play at Alabama. So if you just want to say guys who play at a different spot, you just look at the list. Carson Beck, Marcel Reed is one of the exceptions. Trinidad Chambliss was a guy who was playing at Ferris State. If we just continue to look, Dante Moore. Did Barry Morton always a tech guy? He might be.
I think so.
Dante Moore transferred from UCLA. Barry Morton might have always been a tech guy. He might be one of the guys. Yeah, he was born in Lubbock, so he never – went to Tech.
His entire life he's been a tech guy.
Hey, man, spread your wings.
Did he even visit other schools?
I don't know how that went down. He did get offers from – some of the schools in Texas, but it felt like he was always going to go to Tech. So he's one of the guys. Of course, Fernando Mendoza was at Cal before. Gunnar Stockton's another. So you know what? It's actually more of a mix. Last year, it was all about the transfer quarterbacks. But this year, you know, it's more of a mix as far as guys who did not leave. But, of course, transfers are still very prominent. And guys like Carson Beck got the alleged $4 million deal to go to Miami. And Marcel Reed was asked about a deal of that nature, and he goes, "Well, I'd have to talk to my family first." So, maybe very honest. If a $4 million deal came his way to leave A&M, but he also stated he's very happy at A&M, and we know the Aggies don't have a problem taking care of their guys. And we'll see Marcel Reed versus the big transfer quarterback name from last offseason in a couple of days now. Miami versus A&M on Saturday in College Station. Looked at least before the games begin, as the best or most intriguing of all the first-round games. The Alabama-Oklahoma game should fit that profile, too, but we've watched both those teams play offense over the last month and a half or so. So while that one might be close, I'm not sure how much fun it'll be unless you like bad offenses and really good defenses go at it. And Alabama really doesn't have the excuse. You know, their backs are injured, but all the receivers are healthy. Their quarterback is healthy, and yet they've just put up kind of stinkers the last month or so. So maybe a couple weeks off will get them right. But back to the transfer guys, I'm not sure. Someone's going to do it, because if you have an opening, the quickest way to get better is to hit on a quarterback in the portal. I just don't know that DJ Lagway has shown me anything, or Dylan Rayola has shown me anything that I'd be willing to get into a real tussle over money with not only him, but also the teams competing for him. So if I had a choice, hey, Sorsby, how much would it take for you to come in and be surrounded by the best talent you've ever been surrounded by and up your draft status while having a shot to play in big time games. I'm sure Sorsby's going to ask for a lot too, but I'd probably stay away from Raiola and Lagway.
Sorsby, apparently, his girlfriend plays volleyball at Cincinnati, or at least used to play volleyball at Cincinnati.
Okay.
And now she has also entered the transfer portal and committed to Texas Tech. And so there's some dots being connected.
And Baron Morton's done after this year?
I believe so.
So it makes some sense. Sorsby stays in the Big 12 and then goes to Tech. Yeah, let's just pencil him in for Tech.
Yeah. Carson Beck.
If his girl, well, see how well that worked out for Beck and the girl. I mean, the relationship didn't work out.
But making the playoff is forever.
It's true. It's funny to listen to Mario Cristobal talk about, hey, Carson Beck's one of the most misunderstood players in all of college football. You guys have allowed the public narratives to define who he is, and that's not who he is. Well, if you stay off TikTok. Not TikTok. If you stay off Snapchat, Carson, maybe the narratives would change. Your face and some stupid caption about what you'd like to do to someone, or what you'd like to have them do to you. He's in the era where those become public online. But hey, he is 10-2. He is in the playoff, and he's got a chance to break Aggie hearts along with the rest of that Canes offense. So that's Saturday. And we'll see how that plays out. All right, we'll go to break with that. We're done with hour one here. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. We're closing out our time here at the DraftKings Sportsbook here at the Golden Nugget. We spent a couple days here, always a good time. John's trying to make it, I guess, his third home. He would like to be back sooner rather than later. He's really pushing for March Madness. He'd love to be here for March Madness, if not sooner. We'll see if the Golden Nugget is a place we'll be back. I know we are in the midst of giving you guys a chance to get to the Golden Nugget because we have our bowl pick'em challenge going on. So if you win that, you get a chance to be at the Golden Nugget yourself and get a two-night stay. So if you go to the website, our website, ESPN975.com, and you want to take advantage of the Bowl Mania Challenge. And as I said, you get a chance to a two-night stay here at the Golden Nugget, and they're bringing the ESPN Houston Bowl Mania Challenge to you. So Golden Nugget involved in a lot of the things we do, and if you want to get involved in that contest, go to ESPN975.com, enter, and then pick the bowl games. We've had one so far. We're going to have certainly many more to go, and then, of course, the big ones with the CFP coming up here as well. So you've heard us talk about the Golden Nugget quite a bit. If you want to get a chance to experience what John loves about this place, enter to win. All right, that is hour one wrapped up. We'll be back with hour two.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.